Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon, getting to spend time with you, prescribing hope for healthy families. And as we have discussed so much, it can be discouraging when you're looking around at the news and you listen to the conversation in the grocery store line or look at headlines that are coming across your phone. It can be really discouraging, and you think, what is going on with the world? And am I alone? Are there other people who are concerned about this? Well, there are, and you'll find them right here. And that is the topic of our show today. We're going to be talking to MD Perkins. He's an author, a documentary film producer, and research fellow of church and culture for the American Family Association. He has produced several acclaimed documentaries, and he has a new one that is coming out. You may have heard us talking about it. It is called Culture Warrior, Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency. This is coming out on November the 11th, and it explores the founding of the American Family Association and many of the cultural and spiritual battles that have defined America's national life over the last 50 years, from primetime television to secular humanism, pornography, just all kinds of forces of darkness. Don Wildman sought to confront those forces and awaken the church to be salt and to be light. And just when we think there is no new threat, it feels like there's a new threat. But Solomon wisely said, there is nothing new under the sun. And the root sin under a lot of these issues is the same. We're just finding different expressions, different cultural expressions, different expressions through technological media. And so this is coming out November 11th. MD Perkins produced it, and he's here to tell the story. MD, welcome to the show. We're so glad to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Jessica.
Well, I would love to just hear a little bit about you. Our listeners may or may not be aware of your work. Can you just tell us a little bit about your life and how God called you to really share hope through documentaries?
Well, as a young kid, I watched the movie called Raiders of the Lost Ark, of course, Indiana Jones, and it gave me a hunger and desire to learn about movies. At first, I thought I wanted to be an archaeologist, and then I learned that the real fun was actually making the movies. And so that sent me on a trajectory toward getting into filmmaking. I went to film school, Savannah College of Art and Design, studied film and television production. And as a believer, you know, always thinking about what did it mean to be a Christian and a filmmaker. I didn't know if that meant being a Christian filmmaker, quote unquote, but I knew that whatever I did in terms of media, in terms of film production, would have to involve my Christian faith. And through God's providence and his leading and, you know, things as they progressed over the years, I ended up back in my hometown of Tupelo, Mississippi, ended up going to church with somebody who worked for American Family Association. I knew about the ministry, but I didn't know that they were getting into film and video production. And so was able to get involved here. I've been here since 2014, so just had my 10-year working anniversary. And it's been an amazing opportunity to be able to work on documentaries and other research projects that help to inform and activate people about things that are happening, the history behind it, and try and bring people up to understand more about what's going on in our world and how to respond.
Well, I did not expect that answer to start with Raiders of the Lost Ark, but you never know what the Lord is going to use in your life, right? To point you towards a mission, and you are very mission-minded. And, you know, our show and me, I'm very new still to the American Family Association. We're just about to have our one-year anniversary, and the American Family Radio family has just been, my running joke is that I feel like I show up every day behind the microphone and I have to bring a casserole, like, hey guys, I'm here, you know, because the welcome has been so warm. But I was not able to meet Don Wildman. You know, he struggled with illness before his passing last year. What was your personal experience with Don and with the Wildman family? Because, of course, American Family Association has been carried on in that generational legacy. What's your personal experience like?
Well, Interestingly, I didn't know Don personally, even though I've worked here since 2014. He was already starting to phase out of his time around the office because of those health concerns. So I didn't have a lot of personal interaction with him. I only spent probably three or four times personally interacting with him in very brief, limited settings. But I did grow up here in Tupelo, and so my parents were supporters of AFA, the ministry. And, you know, I grew up listening to JJ on the radio as we were driving to school, you know, so a lot of personal connections. You know, the story of Don and his time in Tupelo, of course, is taking place in places where I've been and where I lived. But, you know, my connection to the ministry and to Don has grown, you know, by focusing on this project and getting to know the family better in a personal way and getting to see the integrity of Don through his children, through their commitment to the same causes that he was committed to. And I've just really been amazed. And you know, I already appreciated AFA before I started working on the documentary. But it has so much enriched and strengthened my love for the ministry, my trust in the leadership, my desire to see the mission and message of AFA continue to go forward, and the uniqueness of AFA as a ministry, where many other places within our nation have struggled or they've been faced with issues of compromise or mission drift and things like this. I don't see this with AFA, and I can say that, you know, I mean, yes, I am an insider in a sense, but as a documentary filmmaker, you always take on that objective role trying to analyze things from a more objective point of view, and I can say that is true of AFA. It's not just things that we would present, you know, to make ourselves look good. It really is where AFA is as a ministry.
I think that's really encouraging, just to see the impact of legacy that lives on. Just recently on the show, we were talking about celebrity culture and how, you know, celebrity culture is all about the here and now. But when we look at, you know, past people who were revered in culture, they were talking about their legacy. And to see someone who wants their legacy to impact people with the good news of the gospel of Jesus is really encouraging. And just like you, MD, I didn't meet Don, but one of the first times I went into the AFA headquarters, I saw a picture of him that's up on the wall. Yeah. It's kind of, you know, like if you go to an amusement park and they draw a little caricature, it kind of looks like that. And it's him like with cleaning supplies. Okay. He's got this cart. And I remember looking at that and thinking, well, there's a story there. That's interesting. And then not long after that, I saw Wesley Wildman, his grandson, going down the hallway upstairs in the upstairs part of the office. And he had a very similar cleaning cart. And he is polishing the handrails and dusting and everything. And I said, Wesley, what are you doing? And he said, my papa said, we are all going to take our turns, and there's no job that any of us is too good to do. And so we still all take a turn in helping to steward this building that God has given us through the faithfulness of the listeners. That made an impression.
Oh, yeah. You know, one of the last photos we have of Don around the office is Don actually holding up a plunger in his arm as he's walking back across the street. Came across the street. AFA used to be on separate sides of the street, and he came over to get a plunger from one side so he could go fix a toilet on the other side. And that was one of his last days here at the office working. I mean, that just tells you a lot about the man's character and his dedication.
It really does, because when I was looking at pictures, I didn't see Lamborghinis or, you know, private jets or anything. I didn't see the plunger either, but I believe it after having seen that. Well, tell us about this documentary about Culture Warrior. How did it come about? What? Give us an overview.
So in 2018, I made a pitch to create a documentary about Don Wildman and the founding of AFA. We had started to assess some of the various materials that we had around here. You know, what would we need to do in case of Don passing, you know, in terms of going out publicly with pictures and comments and you know, stories being written and all of those kinds of things. And it made me think, like, well, I mean, we're a documentary film crew here with American Family Studios, and we've got the ability to look into the history of this, and who else would do it? And I just sensed that there was a story there. I didn't know a lot about Don and AFA's founding, but from that point on, it began a constant push of doing research, and then I was still tied in with the In His Image documentary, so I was doing some work on that, and then I started writing this book on gay Christianity, And anyway, so it's taken a long time to get to a point where now we have a finished film. But, you know, the story of Don and AFA really begins back in 1977, really even earlier before that, in December of 76, with Don sitting down with his family to watch TV during the Christmas holiday, expecting to see something about Christmas. And he's immediately bombarded in the three main stations that are there, ABC, CBS, and NBC, just with sexual content, with bad, foul language, and then with violence. And that was a turning point for Don. I mean, he turned off the TV and just kind of sat there as his daughters explained that to me, reflecting on that evening. And from that began Don's concern for where our culture was and what kind of response the Christians needed to have to these things. And so that's the beginning of what was called the National Federation for Decency. We changed our name in 1988. But in 1977, he started the NFD to try and confront some of these issues in culture related to media. Started with TV, ended up going into issues of questioning pornography proliferation and all kinds of other things. But that's kind of where it began. And so this documentary is not just about trying to present his legacy. It's really trying to give Christians now an understanding of where have we come as a culture? What were the things that really bothered Don, that motivated him to get involved? How can we respond now that as we reflect back on things that we remember, or there's people who are younger who don't remember some of those battles that have happened in years past. So it's trying to give a context for who Don was, what his concern was, as well as how we can respond now in light of these things. Because like you said earlier, the battles have not really changed. Some of the circumstances have changed. Some of the technology has changed. Some of the details of the battles have changed. But the overall emphasis on decency and the importance of that in our society continues to remain.
Well, and I've been blessed to see an advanced screening of this documentary, and we should advise our viewers that there are some disturbing topics that are covered in there, and viewer discretion is advised. But that's kind of what we talk about a lot on this show, on the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, MD, that as parents, we must be aware. We cannot just put our head in the sand and wish these things away and wish that the world was simpler and, you know, not as difficult as things are now. We have to be informed. And one of the things that really struck me in looking at Don starting out on his mission to really talk about decency in society, and he is repeatedly described as plain, like plain looking, plain spoken, living in a plain place with a plain message. How did you see God using an ordinary man in ordinary circumstances to really do extraordinary things?
Well, there's really no reason that Don should have accomplished what he did. You know, that this guy who's a Methodist preacher from Mississippi should be able to sit down with the vice president of CBS and debate the merits of a boycott campaign against the kind of trash that they were showing on the TV at that point. The fact that Don was able to incur that level of attention indicated that he had won, I think, a couple of things. One, he had locked in on something that no one else had really keyed in on. And two, he was effective enough to garner that level of attention from those kinds of people, because otherwise someone like Don is just ignored. And generally that was how he was kind of viewed initially. It was just this curiosity thing. David versus Goliath, you know, of course he'll lose, was kind of the sentiment that they were giving. But of course, if you know the David and Goliath story, yeah, you don't want to present it that way, because David actually wins. But, you know, that was kind of how it started. So, yeah, deep humility from Don. Always underestimated and second-guessed, but still coming through often in the end.
I think that's an important message for us to take away, because sometimes when we feel like we're trying to be faithful to do and say what God has called us to, we feel like, is anyone listening? But just to know that there are examples and we can look at how God has been faithful in the past. Well, when we come back, MD, I want to talk about that opposition, the reaction, the public reaction to Don, and what we can learn from that today as we're really engaged in a lot of the same conversation. We're talking about the documentary Culture Warrior, Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency. More after this break. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. You see, when a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 underwrites ultrasounds for the entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
There's honey in the rock, water in the snow. It's not hard to see. Only you can satisfy. There's honey in the rock. There's honey in the rock.
Welcome back, friends. That is a great message for us. There is honey in the rock, and there we can find peace in a world that feels like there is chaos. Because you know what? God always provides. He always provides in exactly the way that we need, in the timing that we need. And His wisdom is so much better than ours. His ways are higher than our ways. His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. And sometimes what we see as a setback, God is just setting up for a breakthrough. And we are talking today about that very topic with M.D. Perkins. He's an author, documentary, film producer of the movie coming out called Culture Warrior. This is Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency. It comes out November 11th, and we encourage you to check it out. And M.D., I've had a chance to screen this movie, as I said, and I think the word to describe it that came to my mind was gripping. It was really gripping to see this. It definitely felt tense. It felt dramatic. It felt a little bit scary, but it also felt really enlightening and encouraging. And, you know, when you look at this, like you said, Methodist preacher from Mississippi, who is plain in every way you can describe, all of a sudden is debating CBS on the merits of their programming. I mean, that's absolutely incredible. And when we look at him stepping out, basically how this started was he saw, like you said, at the holidays, trying to watch some holiday programming with his family and just seeing things that were indecent and encouraging his congregation, hey, turn off your TV, put your time somewhere else. Yeah. And the response was super interesting. Some people were more of a, you know, I'm from the South too, like a, oh, bless your heart kind of thing. And then other people were really condescending, like, oh, you're okay. Well, and then derisive, and then outright hostile. How do you think, as you were the documentary filmmaker here, how did you see Don taking all of that in stride?
Well, Don certainly understood that he was called to this. This wasn't something that he was doing just for his own pleasure or his own initiative. Some critics even labeled him as just an attention media seeker, you know, that kind of stuff. And that certainly was not the Don that was recounted to me by any of the people that we spoke to, by his family or anything. You know, really, Don would often say, I wish God would just let me go and let me go fishing and serve a tiny rural church somewhere and just, you know, preach the gospel and be able to be there as a pastor to a small group of people. But because the Lord really laid this on his heart, he knew that he couldn't just stop doing it until the Lord actually released him from that call. And so it was, I'm sure that enabled him supernaturally to persevere in times where, yeah, you weren't giving you weren't given the support that you would want to see, even among Christians. I mean, there was a lot of friendly fire that he incurred as well. I mean, of course, he gained the scorn of media elites and pornographers and all these different people who he was specifically confronting. But within the United Methodist Church, he didn't immediately gain a whole lot of support. There were pastors and churches here and there that would support him, but he couldn't get resolutions passed to kind of support some of his causes. He couldn't get a lot of other ministers to come along. In fact, he would often get derisive letters from people saying that he was just causing too much controversy, and he wasn't focused as much on the love of God as he should be, or all these different things, you know, that Christians often hear when they step out there and they try and do something involved in the culture. So I know that there would be times where he was discouraged by that, but also he knew that God had called him to this, and because he would get the kind of attack that he would get from the secular elites, he knew that he was making a difference. And because, you know, when you get filed a lawsuit by Playboy or Penthouse,
oh,
you know you're making a difference on Playboy and Penthouse, even though they might deny it in all these other ways. If they mm-hmm. sue you because you're boycotting 7-Eleven stores and other convenience stores that are selling their product, then you're having an impact on their bottom line. And that was the source of Don Wildman's activism too, was kind of that common sense approach of recognizing, well, I can't reason with these guys, but they will respond to money. And if I can somehow affect people to realize some of the issues of where they're spending their money and cause them to not spend their money there for these reasons, then maybe we can have an impact that way. And he did. And that was a major part of AFA's activism for decades.
Well, you know, that makes me think of two things. One is a quote that I heard from his wife in the documentary. She was talking about just all of the challenges that he faced, all of the opposition.
Yeah.
And she said he had the temperament and the intellect to be able to do that. And it made me think, when you're talking about, you know, some criticism from other Christians, that isn't this a reflection of the body of Christ, that we're all gifted in different ways? Not everyone is going to be called to be a culture warrior, but if you are called, whatever God calls you to, do you have the faithfulness to follow through in obedience to that call, whatever that may be? I think that is a really instructive lesson for us to take away from the documentary. And the second thing is what you were talking about with that consumer power. And, you know, of course, Don was concerned about that negative influence of TV on not only his family, but all families and children especially. And, you know, I think, MD, when anything goes, when there is no absolute truth, when there is no solid foundation, it is really confusing and scary for kids. You can even look at research that shows, like, when you let kids play where there's no fence, they all gather around the middle and they huddle together. But when there are boundaries, they feel safe and they go to the edge of those boundaries. And he said, you know, what I understood him to say in the culture warrior is that it's not that the companies don't have the right to produce that, but he had the right to leverage the power of the consumer to impact demand. So tell us a little bit more about how he did that.
Yeah, I think Don was deeply concerned about the way that these things influenced not just adults and society at large, but children especially, you know, thinking about how much time children were spending in front of a television, what they were watching, how their behaviors would change based on things that they were seeing. And then, of course, with the pornography concern and children getting a hold of that material, you know, exposed to sexually explicit material at a young age, and how that can impact their brain, the way that they're thinking, the way that they respond to others, and even acting out some of the explicit scenes that they would see. And so, you know, Don's response was not to sit back and kind of let these things play out, but he was trying to make an appeal not just to Christians, but really to anyone in society who was concerned about these things. And so it really was kind of, I refer to it as a common grace appeal that he would make, you know, to where we could make an appeal to people who are secular or in different religions and still be able to find that common grace element of we're concerned about how these things impact children. And so he would take on, you know, secular research that that colleges and universities and other researchers were putting out, be able to take that material and use it to show that, see, even this isn't just Christians kind of bothered about, you know, being cultural fuddy-duddies or whatever about things that are on TV. These things actually have an impact. See, here's this group of professors who did this study, and they're saying that these things impact children over here. Here's this other group saying that this is a problem and that society needs to assess how we approach a number of these different things in terms of our media. So Don would leverage things that he found within you know, secular research and use that in his arsenal to help make these appeals, not just to the companies involved, but really more directly to the people, because he knew the people were more apt to even listen to him. The companies were going to do whatever they were going to do in most cases. But if he could get people to listen to what he was saying and to understand the concern, then there would be a much more likely action to be taken place in those situations.
You know, I find that as a professor, as a person in a scientific profession, when I look at research, so many times it's so obvious to see the biblical parallel, you know, when we're looking at some of these things, and it's there. And so being able to make that connection, because we are holistic people, we are mind, body, and spirit, and we know that all of those things lend themselves to contribute to our emotional health, our spiritual health, our mental health. It is all connected. And especially when you're talking about, you know, things like pornography, and we look and see what Don Wildman saw in the 70s. I mean, what was in the 70s is nothing compared to what it was today. But when I was doing research for my book, Behind Closed Doors, I was looking, and I'm going to share with you just this really short passage that I wrote about the history of this, looking at it, because what I discovered was that the word pornography actually originates from two Greek words, pornea, which is just basically a general word to describe sexual immorality, and graphy, which is the written word. So, and what we look at from Ecclesiastes 1:9 is what has been done will be done again. There's nothing new under the sun. So when I was doing my background research, I saw in the 80s, an archaeologist discovered ancient pornographic petroglyphs in China. And when I visited Pompeii, there was a brothel there with erotic wall paintings. The earliest known pornographic films were produced in the 1890s, not the 1980s. And I think that, you know, what I look at as you're making this documentary is thinking, you know, some people might say, well, hey, it's just gotten worse, so his efforts weren't successful. But I think one of the striking things in the documentary is Don's perspective on success versus faithfulness. So what is your perspective now, looking at that span of time and what he did, where he started, where we are now, and how the work goes on?
One of the famous quotes that we utilize several times in the documentary, of course, it's spoken of a lot of here around the office of AFA, is that God has not called us to be successful. He has called us to be faithful. And that's what you were alluding to there. I mean, that was, you know, Don said that. I'm sure others have shared a similar sentiment, but it was a recognition that it's not about the direct results tangibly that we see in the battle. If we're called to do something and we stand up and we speak out because the Lord has laid it upon our hearts to do it and we know we're standing for righteousness and truth, then that's in the Lord's hands. Whatever the tangible results of that are in society belong to the Lord. That's not ours. And so we're trying to be faithful. We're trying to live by faith. God has called us to do this. We're going to stand up and speak out and do it because we know it's the right thing to do. God has called us to do it. He's laid it on my heart to do it, so I'm going to do it. You know, sometimes you see success in the battle. You know, Don got pornography taken out of 7-Eleven stores and a number of other convenience stores. And to this day, you walk in those stores, that material is not sitting on those shelves. You know, you walk into a grocery store right now, you're not seeing Playboy and Penthouse sitting there on the magazine aisle. Now, magazines, you know, are now a little outdated as a form of communication. But the fact remains, in that particular battle, God granted success. And it didn't happen just because some Christians sat and prayed about it. there were certainly plenty of prayers that were happening, but then after praying, men and women got up and spoke out and went to their store managers and wrote letters to the presidents of the companies and pleaded with them, please remove this from your bookshelves because it's harmful to children. I don't want my child seeing this as we walk down the aisle to pick out groceries on a Wednesday afternoon. You know, like all of these things had to take place in order for now. There's still that legacy that lives on in the fact that you don't walk into these stores and frequently see these items anymore. Now, that could change over time, but the reality is for several decades now, that has lived on. So, you know, like I said, we're called to be faithful regardless of whether it seems like we are immediately successful or not, because ultimately God is the judge of that. And whether that is in a salt-like preserving things for a while, you know, things could have declined much faster had Don not been getting up and speaking out on these things. And that's something that we can't really know tangibly in this life. But, you know, when we're in heaven, when we're in eternity reflecting on this, the Lord may show us just the level of success that we did have that we didn't even see in the moment.
I think that's a really important takeaway from this film, because in today's day and age where we live in a world where there's instant gratification, we as parents, as adults who are committed, we want that instant gratification that, oh, that's that feedback that I did what was right. But we really have to be more spiritually disciplined than that and yeah. Know the voice of the Lord in our life. You've talked about it several times about God calling you to do certain things, God calling Dawn to do certain things, and just having the confidence in knowing God's voice and knowing, you know, thinking about he's the good shepherd and yeah. We are his sheep. And yeah. I, you know, he knows his sheep and we know his voice. That's where it is. And, you know, as you're talking about that, MD, I'm thinking about, maybe you'll appreciate this as a filmmaker, one of my favorite movies of all time is It's a Wonderful Life. Mm-hmm. And we think about how, you know, the story of that movie is that he has the gift of going back and seeing what his life would have been like had he not been there. And of course, we don't have that gift here on earth, but I think about that with Don Wildman. I think for me as a nurse practitioner working with kids who are just absolutely devastated by one instance of something that's a harmful exposure that promotes abuse. Even, you know, people may not know this, but in most states, even just forcing a child to watch pornography is classified as legal abuse. And how many kids were spared that because maybe that wasn't brought home. It wasn't brought into their home. They didn't have an exposure. Yeah. And what impact he was able to see. Well, when we come back, I want to talk more about just modern and what is going on and what we can do as parents, what we can learn from this documentary, and what we can learn as parents to be culture warriors of our own. We'll be right back after this break.
Here's Dr. Ligon Duncan from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
I think the most striking thing to me about the Bible is that it not only reveals God to me. It is God speaking to us, revealing himself to us. But in the process of teaching us about himself, he reveals so much about who we are. I often tell people that one of the ways that I know that the Bible is true is the way that it diagnoses my sin. I'm often reading through a passage and I'm thinking, this was written 3,000 years ago, and yet it perfectly diagnoses the state of the sin of my heart. The only way that can happen is if my Creator is actually the author of the book.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
But I ain't really sweating what they say. Ain't no doubt about you. Still see the sunshine above me.
Lord, I love all the ways that you love me. You're a goodness.
Welcome back, friends. That is a great, encouraging, uplifting message in a world where it seems like there is a lot of bad stuff going on out there. We can know that God is the goodness in our life, and we can always find it when we look to Him. And today, we're talking to M.D. Perkins. He's an author, documentary film producer of a movie that's coming out you need to know about. It's called Culture Warrior, Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency. It comes out November 11th, and it explores the founding of the American Family Association. Of course, Don has gone on to be with the Lord and is enjoying the rewards of his work, but we can learn a lot from his life and from his faithfulness and following God's calling specifically in his life. And MD, you know, one of the things that Don said in the documentary that really struck me, because it is something that I definitely face and with my audience and my platform, is that the church had no idea what things were really going on out there. They had not been exposed to a lot of this stuff. A lot of people who were going to church, those weren't, and although that certainly can happen, and Christian people do struggle with things, but for especially that time with a lack of media saturation, they hadn't been exposed to some, they didn't know what really was pornography and what was going on. Yeah. And that's hard for parents, because we might choose to have a high standard of media for ourselves in our home, and we're not exposed. But these things, especially today, are fighting to find their way into the eyesight and the hearts of our kids. So how do we walk that line so carefully, learning some lessons from the past? Like, we want to be aware of what's going on. We don't want to be naive, but we don't want to be immersed or tempted or traumatized. How do you walk that line?
Well, that's always the challenge as a Christian parent, isn't it? I mean, I face it every day with my four kids. You know, how much time is enough time? How much time is too much time when it comes to screens or watching, and even just entertainment? You know, because, you know, even if things in terms of what you're watching isn't full of vile content or anything like that, or questionable material, there's still, you know, you want your children to be able to relate to one another, to be able to think for themselves, to be able to enjoy and create and imagine things beyond just what they're being fed through media. And so I find that to be a constant challenge as a parent, you know. And I think you always second guess choices that you make along the way of, like, have we gone too far here? Have we gone off the rails, you know? But, you know, with Don, I think, you know, he had a very common sense approach to it. His son, Mark, his youngest child, related how if he was watching something on TV that, you know, was turned out to be objectionable in some way, his dad, you know, would just walk through the room and say, "You should find something better to watch," and just kind of leave it at that, you know. Mm-hmm. And those little points of correction along the way, engendering in his son's mind that, okay, like, there's some things that I need to be aware of on here. I can't just be indiscriminately watching something, but also, like, I'm watching in a public room, and my dad could just walk through and say something about the thing that I'm watching. And so having some of those abilities, you know, being mindful of public versus private space and things like that, I think are probably even more important for us now. As, you know, we've moved away from just a TV in the middle of the house to people having iPads and smartphones and things like that that they can just kind of watch tucked away in a corner or something with earphones on, and no one really knows. So just being, I think, that level of awareness, I think, about what our children are consuming is probably important.
I think that is so important. And that goes to what we do on this show is 52 Habits for Healthy Families. And some of those are exactly what you're talking about. One is tech transparency, making sure that any media you consume is out in the open, that anyone can see it, that my husband and I, we have access to each other's phones fully. I can look at his search history. He can see what I've been viewing. You know, we don't have any secrets from each other, because secrecy is where, especially kids, what I see is they'll see something that they don't really understand, and they may know inherently that there's something that's bad about it. It may even cause their body to respond, and they don't understand it. They feel guilty, but they don't know why. But then they continue on in secrecy because they don't have even the language to describe some of the things that they have seen, which is why it's really important for us to monitor what our kids are watching and to watch together. Just like you described, Dawn, giving those little micro points of correction, saying, oh, let me give you some language for this. This is abuse. This is, you know, exploitation. This is indecent. And here's how we respond to that. I think that's really important, but it can be really hard for parents to do. And it, you know, other things are all also having those tech-free zones and tech-free times, of course. But how you mentioned MD being a dad of four, I'm a mom of four. How has making this documentary made you reflect on your role as a dad? And has it changed the way that you thought about anything or approached anything with your own kids?
Well, I have not been asked that question yet, but as I'm thinking about it, you know, there's so many ways. I mean, you always feel like a failure oftentimes as a parent because you see your own failures, or you see something come out in your kids and you see yourself reflected in their sin or their bad attitudes and things like that. And more often than not, you know, you're like, oh yeah, that was me. That came from me down the line. But, you know, I think one thing I would take away from this is just the need to really cherish the time of childhood and being a father to young children and giving that time to them. And, you know, one thing that my wife and I have really tried to guard is our meal times as a family, you know, not sitting in front of the TV, not everybody kind of going to their rooms or anything like this, but we sit around the dinner table as a family, have conversation together, not just learning about your day, but also like me offering myself to them and saying, here's what I was reading about, or I heard somebody ask me this today, you know, and obviously like keeping it within age appropriate range. I can't always talk about my work sometimes, you know, writing about homosexuality and the battles in culture and things like that. So, you know, you got to make it G-rated or whatever, but, you know, but having that time to try and engage the children. I remember this distinctly in my family growing up, that my dad was a physician, so he would often have to work late and things like that. But one thing he always guarded was our mealtimes together as a family, because he wanted to make sure that he got that time to sit down with us at a dinner table and to be able to interact and laugh together and reflect together, give advice or counsel, or just hear about what's going on in each other's lives. And so I've become more appreciative of that. I mean, it's the practice that my wife and I already had, but now as I've reflected on it, it's something that's become more precious to me as I'm starting to see my children grow up and you know, personalities change a little bit with the teenage years and things like that. And you're just like, oh man, that time slips away so quickly. And I want to make sure that I really and grasping the weight of having that time with them during those young years.
You know, I love to hear you say that. As a dad, I think that is so powerful. And we're talking about a documentary called Culture Warrior, and yet somehow we're talking about your takeaway is mealtime. But that is the important part. I think about the verse in Romans about, you know, renew your mind. It's not just about minimizing those negative influences, and that is important, but it's also about replacing those with things that are God honoring, thinking about, you know, what is praiseworthy, what is noble, what is beautiful, all of those things. And I think what you're describing, MD, is the difference between a legalistic approach and a relational approach, because there are some who might look at what Dawn did and think, oh, that's so legalistic, because, you know, at one point they talk about how they were counting and quantifying the obscene acts that were happening. Now, you have to remember, this is before the internet, before computers, really, you know, and people are doing that now. And I think that was important for objectivity. Yeah. But how do you walk that line between legalism and just saying, let's just, you know, well, even now people are accusing, oh, you just want to ban books, you want to censor. That's not the case. How do we walk that line between legalism and relational approach?
Yeah, that's a great question, because that's a lot of where we live. It's easy to always make the list of things you shouldn't do. And obviously there's times where we just have to say, look, this is a law and you're not going to cross over this line, or to even tell a child, you should not do this. And I don't have to explain to you why. But I think part of it is being able to, as the child grows and matures, be able to explain the logic behind this. And also, you know, to sometimes be very honest with our children about who we are as people, you know, and not just presenting this perfect face of us as objective adults in the situation. I had a recent conversation with my teenage daughter where I reflected on my own life in younger years, my teenage years, and ways that I wish I was different, and ways in which things that she feels like are harsh about what we're trying to instill in her now are sometimes a reflection of things that I don't want her to have to experience because I lived that way or I did that thing and I wish that I hadn't. And I hope that she will, at a younger age, grasp that so that she's spared from some of the consequences of those bad choices or attitudes or worldviews or different things that were there at that time. So, you know, I think part of it is that having the humility, you know, which frankly has to be God-granted. We can't just mm-hmm. stir up humility within ourselves. But to be able to be humble enough to say, you know, I'm not perfect, and I'm not perfect as a parent, but here's where I'm trying to get to. And I hope, you know, sometimes we have to be objective as a parent, but sometimes we need to relate to our kids, I think, on that level that gives them the idea that they understand that we're not trying to instill perfection. We're trying to point them to where there's a ready heart obedience from them that springs out in all of these different ways.
I think that's so true. And I'm sure that Don's kids would be the first to stand in line and say, no, he wasn't perfect either. They're yes. not trying to, you know, make him a saint, but he was a faithful servant of God. And that is exactly what you're talking about, the legacy that we want to leave for our kids. And as we see the media just producing more and more shocking and salacious things, I see the sensitivity of the public dropping, just saying, hey, this is just art. This is just normal expression. And yeah. we even saw Playboy, you mentioned that earlier, MD, move to a more conservative image-based stance for a time, like putting people's clothes back on. And, and as we said before, Solomon said, there is nothing new under the sun. And what I see in this, MD, is that these are just ways to distort and deface people made in the image of God. That is really the heart of what all of this is. So how do we find the encouragement to continue to get up, to know that in this world we will have trouble, but how do we take heart and continue to get up every day and follow God's calling in our life, whatever that may be, wherever that may take us?
Well, I mean, we certainly remember that this world is ultimately not our home and that we're living for a higher calling than just the here and now. But you know, like we were talking about earlier in terms of faithfulness, that that we're trusting that how we live does make a difference. And the things that we speak to and the things that we fill our minds with and the things that we share with our children, all of those things make a difference. We can speak of it in the negative sense, you know, of pornography makes a difference in a negative sense. But also, like you were saying, the building up, the encouragement, the gospel conversations, the worldview points of correction and things like that, those things matter over time. They will have an impact on our children, on our friends and loved ones and people that we're having these conversations with. And so, like we were saying in the big picture, you know, we're called to do these things because God has called us, but the success is in His hands. It's not up to us to make it all perfect. And so we trust that as we are faithful to Him, that He will give the increase. He will bring about the fruit.
I think that's a great word of encouragement. And this movie is coming out November 11th, Culture Warrior. And MD, we haven't even scratched the surface on some of the things that yeah. happened in here. It is gripping. It is compelling. There is legal drama. I mean, it really is amazing to see the scale. So where can our listeners go to see it for themselves?
CultureWarrior.movie. CultureWarrior.movie. That's a website. You just type that in and you'll be able to right now watch the trailer. But as we come to the release, that's actually where the film will be playing and people will be able to watch it there for free. So go to culturewarrior.movie and you can sign up for emails. You can connect with us there.
Well, you heard it here from the film producer. Thank you so much, MD, for joining us. Such a great, encouraging conversation. It is all about relationships, and it is all about just following God's calling in our life and being faithful to do that. And one day, we pray and hope that we will hear the words, "Get well done, my good and faithful servant." Well, you heard it here. Culture Warrior, Don Wildman, and the Battle for Decency, November 11th. In the meantime, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you. May he be gracious to you and give you peace. And we will see you right here next time, prescribing more hope for healthy families. There is so much more to explore, and we won't stop. We'll see you then.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.